This date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. March 13, 1960, Tony. It must be the time of year when franchises move. Yesterday was the early 90s when the Raiders moved from L.A. to Oakland. In 1960, the NFL's Chicago Cardinals took up the moving vans and headed to St. Louis. And they would ultimately settle in now Glendale, Arizona, where they play their games, the Arizona Cardinals. But Chicago Cardinals making the move to St. Louis on this date in 1960. Not a whole lot else. Brian Saxton was born on this date. Not Brian Saxton. Okay, that's close. That's all I got for you. He's a tight end for your New York Giants. And it's Trent Dilfer's birthday. Oh, everyone celebrate with great joy. Best Friends Company of Jacksonville. They bring you this date in football history. No matter how little there is that happened on this date or how much. Duval Doom's favorite segment on the program, by the way. Their mission at Best Fence, fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price, giving you unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Free agency continues around the National Football League. The division rival Tennessee Titans have agreed to deals with a couple of pass rushers this morning. They re-signed one of their own, the first-round pick Derek Morgan, also signed pass rushing linebacker Brian Arakpo. Health has been a concern for Arakpo to this point in his career. He has 40 sacks in his first six seasons in the league, but has missed 24 games in the last 3 years. Morgan is coming off the best season of his career. He had 43 tackles, 6.5 sacks after moving to outside linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. The Washington Redskins have signed Terrence Knighton, the former Jaguar, to a one-year, $4 million deal. Dwayne Bowe has been released by the Kansas City Chiefs. Stevie Johnson, who we were just talking about, is reportedly receiving interest from the Cleveland Browns. Darren McFadden has agreed to a two-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys. Trent Richardson, as we've talked about, has been released by the Colts. This saga, a lot of fun to watch last night. Jordan Cameron has signed with Miami for 2 years, $15 million, which is the contract he was rumored to have agreed to with the Cleveland Browns earlier in the day yesterday.
Yeah, some of that.
Charles Clay, whom the Fins placed the transition tag on, he had been up in Buffalo talking a contract with them, is visiting the Cleveland Browns, but the Fins have not removed that transition tag off of Charles Clay yet, meaning that whatever contract Cleveland may negotiate with them, they could match it and keep the player if they wanted to keep both those guys to play the tight end position going forward. But Jordan Cameron going to Miami, Charles Clay visiting Cleveland today.
Well, and I don't think it's a bad idea for Miami to have them both. I mean, look, New England looked like they were maybe not going to revolutionize the league, but certainly have a very effective offense with Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. And Gronkowski would be Cameron, right? More of your typical big inline guy who can stretch the seam. I'm not saying he's on Gronk's level. And then Clay is more of your movable piece H-back type, much
sure,
like Hernandez
well,
was.
And what it's become, look, Julius Thomas signs here in Jacksonville. Niles Paul re-signs with Washington before this free agency even hits. Miami decides to put the transition tag basically so that they can control Clay without controlling Clay, like at least have the opportunity to keep him if they want to. The Cleveland Browns, to me, with the situation that they're currently in, it shows, again, the disorganization in the front office of that team, because if they just place the transition tag on Cameron, if he was a guy you wanted to keep, then put that tag on him so that if anyone else wants him, you can at least keep him if you want. You did it last year with Alex Mack. If this is a guy that you want to keep, then why not put that transition tag on him 2 weeks ago?
Especially since they were willing to give him a two-year, $15 million contract. The
right.
Transition tag would have cost about $7.1 million, which is roughly half, you know, basically 1 year of that 2 year deal
exactly
that you're offering him. So yeah, you're right. And, you know, so, but if I'm Miami again, if Charles Clay wants to sign the tag, I'll happily take him into the fold.
Sure.
And keep him there. And look, Cameron, why did he only get a 2 year deal, Tony? He's had three concussions in two seasons,
yes,
right?
Yes, he has.
He's a very good field stretcher. He maybe stretched the field better than Julius Thomas does. I think Julius Thomas overall is better than Jordan Cameron, and then you factor in the health risk of having the concussions, I think that margin increases. But if he's healthy, he averaged over 17 yards a catch last year. It's a pretty crappy quarterback play in Cleveland. It also just shows you beyond the dysfunction of how Cleveland is making decisions that who the hell really wants to go to Cleveland right now, right? Because especially if you're a pass catcher, and people I'm sure have said that about Jacksonville, and we locally have said, well, that's BS over the years. But the fact of the matter is their quarterback situation, what is it? We don't know, right? Are they gonna still talked about making a big move to try to trade for somebody or trade up to get Mariota? Are they gonna go with Josh McCown, who they signed as their starter? He was terrible last year. Manziel, last we heard just a few days ago, is still in rehab. We don't know what the future holds.
And there's a difference between, you know, the talking heads around the National Football League, guys like Wingo or Schlereth or those types of guys that do this, them continuing to take cheap shots at the Jacksonville Jaguars. They do the same thing with the Cleveland Browns. What you aren't seeing is the insider guys, the Schefters and the Polians, those types of guys that have been inside the business for a while that aren't just, in my opinion, talking heads on a lot of these places. They don't take those pot shots. You know, they don't do that with the Jacksonville Jaguars the way that they still do with the Browns, where I think a lot of people around the league are going, what is their plan? What are they doing? And I don't feel like that's the discussion from a lot of the people in the know in the National Football League nationally right now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. It is still with Cleveland. It is still with Oakland. Just this idea of what are they doing and where are they trying to get to? Because the decisions they're making within these organizations still don't make much sense.
I got a lot of texts coming in today. Not something we do a whole lot of, but nevertheless, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line is open to you at 641-1010. We'll get to a few of those before we get out of here. Some interesting questions coming in on the text line, and we'll address those. But coming up next, we've got our Friday Top 5. Fat Tony and I will give you our 5 most dramatic sporting events that we've attended in person that are not Jaguar games. Mm-hmm. Jaguar games are off the list. So outside of Jaguar games, what are the 5 most dramatic sporting events? And I guarantee you a couple of them you haven't been to, Tony. A couple of the ones on my list, there's no way in hell you've been to them.
No, same with mine.
I'm sure that's the case. You know, it's a little more personal stuff. So from whatever level of sports we're talking about, drama is drama. You can tweet us your answers. Which would be the most dramatic sporting event you've attended in person other than any Jaguar game you may have been to over the years? At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler on the tweet line. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Claude Nolan Cadillac since 1905, serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And by the way, the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida to sell and service the ELR. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any Cadillac model. Claude Nolan Cadillac is guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service, the elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for our Friday sponsor of Jaguars today. That would be Claude Nolan Cadillac. Back with the Friday Top 5. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank Field. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we'll get to some of these texts pouring in before the show is done today. Tony, happy birthday wishes are in order from Jaguar fans out there, apparently, as Joey Kloss on Twitter just tweeted, said, I share my birthday with Trent Dilfer, hashtag damn it. As we just found out, that is today. Happy birthday to Joey. Also, Zach Burgess, who's in the Coast Guard, big Jaguar fan, I'm told, is celebrating a birthday today as well. So, Congratulations. You've made it another year. The anniversary of your birth has
very nice.
Come around again. It's fantastic. Happy for both of you. Hope you go out and celebrate with discretion. All right? Perhaps you're going to the Blaylock shindig today, aren't you?
Yeah, the Blaylock bash.
The Bye-bye bash.
We say goodbye. Yeah, she's, I think 7 to 9 is the official time on the party, but obviously Frank.
Hey, Blaylock, love you, miss you. Old dude with a kid, movie night at the house. By the way, my wife is seriously, she's going out tonight with some college friends.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not very much a social butterfly. You may have noticed, Tony. But I have daddy duty tonight. I love it. For a movie night on Friday nights means I get to see, whatever Star Wars movie Colin has not watched in, I don't know, the last 6 days for the 27th time. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I was trying to find some better birthdays for these guys, just looking on this date.
Is there anything better?
Johan Santana, that's better than Dilfer, probably. I mean, Dilfer is a Super Bowl champion, but Santana probably more accomplished in the sport. And the only other one I could find, you remember the music group, the Bloodhound Gang?
Oh, yeah. I have them on all my favorite LPs.
Spanky G from the Bloodhound Gang.
I don't know what you're talking about. Spanky G. Do you really remember the Bloodhound
Gang? Yeah. You
what
and me,
they?
Baby, ain't nothing but mammals.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's them. That's the Bloodhound Gang.
All right. That one I remember. I would not have. Was that a one hit for them kind of situation?
They might have had one or two more, but they didn't.
Are
have
they opening
much.
For Elton John tomorrow?
I would love to see that, but I highly doubt that they are.
All right. Very nice. One hit wonders. Love them. That's on next Friday's top five. You never know. I swear. We sit
Spanky
here.
Spanky G.
We sit here and we just go over, grill ourselves. What are we going to do for the top five? What are we going to do? We put way too much thought into really a one segment, one off kind of thing. And then after we figure it out, then like five better ideas come to us.
That's how it works, man.
The next hour. So today we settled with, Tony,
start keeping a running list. That's what we needed. Like
right,
when we have the idea,
we
just need to
time.
Write them down.
Oh, well, we always say, in the many years I've been doing radio, I thought if I were organized, I would do a much better job. But how many times have we said, well, that's a show for the summer, right?
Yeah.
And then we never remember what we get to
someday in the middle of summer, like, what are we going to do?
Hey,
we
Tyler,
had an idea.
Tyler, new assignment for you. Every time Tony and I say, ooh, that would be a good idea for a future whatever, you write that down.
Yeah, write it down. Don't even tell us you wrote it down.
Don't tell us. And when you accumulate three or four of them, send us an email and say, hey, guys, what about these brilliant show ideas?
That
would
it.
Be a good idea.
No problem.
All right. He's on it. The top five most dramatic non-Jaguar sporting events that we have seen in person. Let us begin the countdown.
Number five.
Five. Come on.
Five.
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 Number five.
All right, number five for me. Let's start local.
All right.
For me. Go
sure.
back to my junior year of high school. The Wolves and Wolfpack were a terrible, terrible, terrible football team. I mean, terrible from the time I got on that campus. They won, I think, a combined three games my first 2 years on the campus. They had not been to the playoffs in a long time, 1978 at the time. So it would have been 22 years since Wolfson had made the high school playoffs, which is not that difficult to do. Well, they did it for the first time since 1978 in 2000. November of 2000, I went to every game. There are still kids who were a member of that team who were like, they meet me, and I'm like, yeah, I was a big, you know, I went to all the games. I went to home and road games that year. It was the first year I had a car, and they were like, yeah, there was some idiot in the stands. He would harass officials. He always painted his chest. I was like, yeah, that's me, bro. Like, I was that guy for the Wolves and Wolfpack. They got into a shootout in 2000 to get into the playoffs, beat First Coast and Terry Parker to get in. They went to Tallahassee and got beat pretty badly that year in the first round of the playoffs. But for the first time since 1978, they made it. They had to beat Inglewood dramatically 14-7 the last week of the regular season to get to that point. But won that shootout. It was a lot of fun. Also, I want to mention a number five. This one, again, personal for me, and we already have Gator fans that are mad at us for having J.P. Shadrick on. Seeing Vanderbilt beat Florida for the first time since World War II in the Swamp was damn sweet.
Now, wait a minute. That doesn't make your top five? This is honorable mention?
That's an honorable mention. See, 34-17. I still have the pictures of it on my phone.
They now hate you as well.
They can hate me all they want. We tried. We tried, Florida. We tried to show you that Muschamp should be gone. I remember doing the PSA that we played on air saying, do the right thing, Florida. Lose to Vanderbilt and you can be rid of Will Muschamp. We tried to help you out. You didn't want to
take our
help.
They got half of it, right?
34-17 in the Swamp just a couple years ago. Man, that was sweet.
All right. I will go number five for me. I'll give you one honorable. It's funny you said junior year of high school because that's right where I went with my first one. Honorable mention to the Fern Bowl in 1985. That would have been about December 1985. DeLand versus Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
When back in an era, Tony, where literally the DeLand High School Bulldogs may have thrown the ball three times in a game.
Yeah.
Right? And it completed one pass for 12 yards, and it would just run. And that was the way they played high school football. And they won it on a tight end option pass where he, an end around by the tight end who threw a like a 63-yard bomb in the final minute of the game was exciting. But junior year of high school, I'm on the boys' JV team, basketball. That's right, JV. What are you going to say about it? Anyway, we played Seabreeze in Daytona, and after we were done playing, the girls' varsity team was going to play, and then the boys' varsity team, okay? The girls' varsity team was the defending state champs that year, okay, in the highest classification in the state of Florida. They were really good. Had a girl named Bridget Gordon. I've talked about her so many times over the years. She went on to go play at Tennessee, was an Olympian. George Bush, the elder at the time, called her the best basketball player, female basketball player on the planet at one point when she visited the White House. But Bridget Gordon was already on the radar. She was a senior already on the radar of all the big programs. Pat Summitt, the coach of the Tennessee Vols, was at the game. And they're losing to Seabreeze. And literally, the final shot of regulation, she got the ball, the inbound with a few seconds left. She gets the ball just over half court. And the most impressive thing about it, she didn't heave it. She rose up and fired a jumper from just over half court, bottom of the net, and every head flipped up to Pat Summitt, who was sitting at the top corner in the bleachers, and she just had this look on her face like, yep. and she ended up going to Tennessee. She hits the bucket. They go to overtime. She scored 10 of 12 points in overtime, and they go on to win the game. That, to me, was the number five most dramatic. Doesn't have to be a big one, but that if you had been there, you would have agreed with me. All right, moving on in the countdown.
1, 2, 3, 4.
4, 4, 4, 4, 4.
Number 4.
All right, this one, again, this one a little bit personal for me. This is the first game I ever broadcast, okay? A college basketball game between Flagler and Embry-Riddle. And this was 94, 95, somewhere around there. And at the time, super heated rivalry. In fact, the mascots get into a fight once at a Flagler Embry-Riddle game. It was, we had bench clears. I mean, it was a really intense rivalry for a couple of small schools that weren't winning any kind of national honors or anything like that.
Sure.
Bahati Van Pelt, who was a Jaguar employee, kind of like a, what would his role have been? Kind of like a player, kind of like Marcus Pollard is right now, right? A guy, how would you describe Marcus Pollard's role? You know, like helping players adjust to life in the NFL, taking care of things, you know, that guy. He worked for the Jags for years after this. He was on the team at Flagler at the time and came down to a final second shot. Flagler loses, but the ball is in the air as the clock goes to zeros and Bahati had taken the shot from, again, just over half court, this time the iron unkind. But for my first game to ever broadcast, to have it come down to a potential buzzer beater in the final second was pretty damn dramatic. And Flagler falls to Embry-Riddle by a point. That was my number four.
Number four for me, my birthday, 2007. July 18th, 2007, my brother and I were going up to Atlanta for a couple days. And every year I try to get up and watch a couple Braves games. And this year happened to be right around my birthday. The Cincinnati Reds were coming to town. Well, why did I want to be there when the Cincinnati Reds were coming to town? Because Ken Griffey Jr. was on that team at that time. And I get to the stadium. It's an afternoon game, so I had to leave, you know, my house here in Jacksonville at like 5 a.m. to get up there for an afternoon game, drive straight to the stadium, get in there. I'm sitting in the outfield bleachers. It's 120 degrees or something like that out there. It is miserable to sit there. Ken Griffey was sitting on 499 home runs coming into that game. And his first at bat, he hit one to the warning track in right field. And I was like, oh, you know, the idea of being there for Griffey hitting 500 was so amazing. His second at bat, he hit one to the warning track right in front of me. Like, if he had put it in the stands, I might have been able to grab the ball. You know, I was that kind of close to it, but he hit it to the warning track and Andrew Jones made the play. He didn't hit home run number 500 that day, but I watched him hit it to the warning track twice. The Braves lost that game 5-4 in 15 innings. So it was still a memorable day for me because I didn't get up to go. Once a game starts, I'm in. I don't move. I don't get up. Like, if a guy comes by with drinks, I'll buy him there. But I don't miss anything in the game once I'm there. So for 15 innings, I sat there in 115 degrees just beating down on me. My brother kept getting up to go get in shade. He was like, I don't know how you're doing this. I'm like, I'm watching the damn game. This is why I'm here. But saw the Braves lose 5-4 in 15 innings on my birthday, 2007. And Griffey hit two to the warning track. That was pretty awesome.
And so Vandy beating Florida in the Swamp doesn't beat 15 innings of warning track fly balls. Unbelievable upset so far in the Friday Top 5. Let's move along.
Number two.
Bringing it back local just a couple of years ago, here for the past 4 years, basically, I don't get the chance to go see a whole lot of, like, on Friday nights, I'm doing the show, so I don't get a chance to go see a lot of high school football until we get to playoff time, and then I try to get out to a game or two every year. But with high school basketball, here for the past 4 years, I've made it a point to go see Wolfson at least once or twice when they're playing in the playoffs because they've been a good basketball program for a long time. 2012, the Wolfpack made the Final Four in the state in 6A, and I saw them play their final two games before they got to the Final Four, so the round of 16 and the round of 8. They won both games by a combined 2 points. It was amazing theater going to watch those Wolfson Wolfpacks teams. In February 2012, they beat Ridgeview 65-64. They hit a three-pointer with about 3 minutes left to give them the lead. They went like 8-for-8 from the free throw line in the last 40 seconds of that game, which you don't see high school kids do ever. Against Pensacola Pine Forest the next week, they went 70-69. They made their last 7 free throws, I want to say, in that game. There was a tip-in from Pine Forest with about a second left in that game to make it 70-69. I mean, both games were incredible theater. I did half storm a court when they beat Pensacola Pine Forest. You know, it just watching your alma mater do things like that, it's always fun. But Wolfson in February of 2012 getting to the Final Four in the state, 65-64 over Ridgeview, 70-69 over Pensacola Pine Forest.
All right, number three for me, I thought J.P. Shattuck was going to go to this one. I mean, he gave so many LSU games in there. Mm-hmm. LSU 2007. In Death Valley, I'm doing sideline for Touchdown Radio. Frank Frangie and Gino Toretta were play-by-play in color. And LSU playing Auburn. And they're trailing the Tigers. LSU's ranked 5th in the country at this time. Auburn's like 18th in the country. They're trailing the Tigers 24-23. I want to say about 7 seconds left on the clock. And Les Miles can opt to kick a field goal and win the game. Win, mm-hmm. Not send it to overtime. Win the game. What does he do? He sends Matt Flynn in the offense out there, and he throws kind of a floater to the right front corner of the end zone, yep. And he hits Demetrius Byrd for a touchdown, and there was one tick left. And as it happened, the way it played out, had he dropped the ball, there would have been 1 second. They could have kicked the field goal. But as it's going, Tony, that ball gets tipped up in the air for just a second. If the clock operator is a little slow on the switch, game's over, yeah. And they don't even get to try it. Trendon Holiday played in that game, too. One of the quickest individuals I've ever seen in person. But that Matt Flynn to Demetrius Byrd, 30-24, the final, LSU over Auburn in 2007. Number three for me. Moving on.
Number two.
All right, let's get to the big game, the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 42. You should remember this one well, Tony.
I think I do.
You may have a souvenir or two that I scraped together for you there. As the New York Giants defeated the New England Patriots 17-14. That, of course, the David Tyree game, and Plexico Burress catches the game-winning touchdown following the Tyree reception. Brady almost hits Moss for what would have been a long touchdown. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, you had the undefeated Patriots looking for 19-0, greatest team of all time. They were ready to be coronated, and I've told it many times, the look on Junior Seau's face coming off that field, I'll never forget it. Here's a guy, this is going to be the capstone to a Hall of Fame career. He had never won at that level, had been to the Super Bowl with San Diego, but hadn't won it, and they couldn't believe it. They simply couldn't believe that they lost the game. And not only the fact that they had the chance to have the best record in NFL history, but the fashion in which they lost it. Second most dramatic sporting event that I've attended in person was Super Bowl 42.
I'm really curious to hear about number one. Number two for me, just last year. But Martin Keimer making that putt on 17 at the Players was pretty incredible. I was actually live on the air broadcasting at that time. We were doing live broadcasts through the end of the tournament, so I had been sitting there with Caddy Mike for an hour and a half of that rain delay. You know, we were pushing through trying to get those last couple of holes in. They finally get back out there, and when Keimer hit that ball to the top level on the green on 17, after the way he had played 16, we were all like, he's done. He's toast. There's no way. I'm not even sure he can two-putt from where he is on this green on 17. And to be on there live listening when Keimer made that putt, it was one of the greatest moments in that tournament's history. To be a part of it the way that I was is truly an honor. He winds up beating Jim Furyk by one stroke, Sergio by two in last year's tournament. It was just incredible theater and one of the most dramatic places in sports right now, that Island Green at 17.
I miss a lot of drama at the Players because I'm a Sunday watch it on TV guy. In fact, the only Sunday round I can really remember going to was the year Davis Love shot 64 and blew away the field. Mm-hmm. So was it the drama, but great story there. And that brings us to?
Four.
Two.
Number one.
All right, the most dramatic thing I've ever been there for. Not necessarily my favorite, but most dramatic moment I've ever seen. November of 2006. The Florida Gators are a team with Coach Urban Meyer that is trying to, they're clawing basically to stay on top of the SEC East, put themselves in a position to get to Atlanta. Steve Spurrier and the South Carolina Gamecocks are coming down to the swamp. South Carolina hadn't won a game in Gainesville in a very, very long time. The Gators are a team that keeps winning games 24-21, 24-17. They're holding on in all these games. The Carolina lines up for a game-winning field goal of 48 yards, and for the third time in that game alone, Jarvis Moss leaps up over the line of scrimmage and blocks a kick. The second field goal he had blocked, he had also blocked an extra point in that game. The Gators win 17-16. So without the extra point block, who knows what happens to the Florida Gators that year. They go on to win a national title. I talked when JP was in here about the noise in the stadium when I was there in 2004 here, when they threw the touchdown pass to Jimmy Smith, Byron to Jimmy for 40 yards, and then noise when Peyton came back on the field, and that air in front of me vibrating, not even close to what I experienced in the swamp. That I thought the building was going to collapse underneath all of us with how just crazy that place went. It was bananas in that place. I thought the student section was going to collapse on itself after he had blocked that field goal. I was in the media seating, which in Gainesville, it's open air and it's also concrete. So the sound echoes, like it reverberates through there. My head, I felt like it was going to explode, honestly, when Jarvis Moss blocked that field goal. But it's the most dramatic thing I've ever seen in person. And for it to be really the key moment for the Gators on their way to a national title is pretty cool. And I don't go down to the swamp for all their games. You know, I maybe see one a year. And really, it's one every other year when Vanderbilt comes down to the swamp.
All right. And keep in mind, these are our top five most dramatic non-Jaguar sporting events, because the way you described that was pretty much the way I recall every game down the stretch here at home at Alltel in 96.
Yep.
Was exactly that kind of feel. I know what you're talking about. The air literally shakes in front of your eyes. It feels like it's moving, and maybe I used literally, I don't know if I used it properly there, because I certainly believe it was shaking in front of my eyes. How about that? My number one, I told you Super Bowl 42 was my number two. Super Bowl 43 topped it the very next year. Pittsburgh over Arizona, 27-23. You know, the thing that put it over the top, I think, was just the timing of the game-winning score and the fact that it was a little bit more back and forth. Fitzgerald had just scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
Ben leads him down and hits Santonio Holmes.
It was two good halves
seconds
instead of one in that game.
Oh, it was phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, and really, the play at the end of the first half, maybe the most memorable sporting play, one of them that I've seen in person. I don't want to leave out an obvious one I'm overlooking here, but that game, Pittsburgh beating Arizona 27-23, Super Bowl 43, the most dramatic one that I can recall having been a part of. All right, so there are our Friday top fives five most dramatic non-Jaguar sporting events that we have seen in person. We'll come back, get a few of yours, and also check in with some of your texts and phone calls and tweets as well as we wrap things up with a look at the fan feedback spotlight. It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch they come here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Cardinal and Cadillac Friday, Jaguars Today. Taking a look at the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. A couple quick things, Tony, before we wrap up with the fan feedback spotlight. What position would the Jags take Landon Collins? Why not three if they really want him? No. First of all, Landon Collins is a strong safety to me, not a free safety. I think Landon Collins, a lot of people are going to be wondering, is he another Mark Barron? You know, we've seen DBs play very well at times. D. Milner, you know, I know they're not all the same guy, not all the same position under Nick Saban, not carry that over despite being high draft picks in the NFL. I know they're going to look at Landon Collins or talk to him. I don't see that being very likely even if they trade back.
Me either. If they trade back, I think it would be, I don't know, offensive line, pass rusher.
There's a lot
of those pass rushers and wide receivers in this
depending draft. On how far they move back, I could even see them going running back with the first pick. You know, depending on what else they got to supplement their team.
Sure.
Let's see. Do you feel that the team is naming the new free agent starters to justify what they spent on them? Naming starters without a downplayed in our system doesn't make sense, especially if they weren't starters on their previous team. And what happened to competition? Look, competition's great. Is Tom Brady facing competition? Why not?
And I don't know that they're necessarily saying these guys won't have to compete to get these jobs. Davon House is going to have to show that he's going to be on the field. I think that he has a leg up because of what they're paying him. But look, Audric is a starter in this league. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sure that the team is saying that Sergio Brown is our starting free safety. It's, we'd like him to be.
Here's the thing. You can get beat out, but there's no competition. Devon House is the number one corner on this football team.
Probably, yeah.
They're not doing that to justify what they paid him. They paid him that because they believe that's what he's going to be.
Yes.
And Parnell's not competing for the right tackle spot. Could he lose it at some point if he plays poorly? Sure. But he walks in as the starting right tackle. Julius Thomas is not competing with Mercedes Lewis to be the primary pass-catching tight end.
And take
in
a look
offense.
At what you can on film from Parnell. He's the best right tackle on this team.
Right. So, yeah. So, I don't think they're doing it to justify. They didn't just splash money around, and not know who they're signing. They gave the money because they felt like those guys were worthy of being walk-in starters. It happens all around the league. That's just the way it is.
And they'll still have to compete. It's not like there won't be competition.
Blake wasn't in Greg Olsen's system last year. You want him to compete for the job too? Some guys get anointed. That's just the way it is because you pick them based on what you project them to be able to do. How come nobody's talking about Vic the Gourd Beasley at number three? I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. I think it'd be a little bit more likely if they traded down a few spots as some team. Let's say the Jets wanted to come up and get Mariota, and they only dropped to six, and they miss out on Dante Fowler. They really like Vic Beasley. I could see that. By the way, Dave Caldwell told us there will be competition. Guy like Scooter, he's going to come in as your starter. He goes, hey, if he gets beat out, he gets beat out. That's fine because we're probably not going to have to spend huge money at that position. I don't think they're going to necessarily go Vic Beasley that high, but you and I have talked about it. He's disappeared in some big games in college, but overall, his overall numbers, pretty damn impressive, and his measurables are off the charts.
No, they are. I don't love Vic Beasley at number three, but look, I don't know what the Jaguars are thinking with this, and by the way, you're not going to know either until they turn in that draft card. You certainly didn't last year. So, look, we could talk about it for the next month, though. We will.
Sure, why not? Especially all next week. Let's see. And finally, the Chargers haven't come to terms with safety Eric Weddle. If released, would he be a good target for the Jags? I looked it up. Eric Weddle's got 1 year left on his deal, $7.5 million, basically. Whether they get a long-term extension done with him or not, they're not cutting him loose. They're not releasing Eric Weddle.
No.
Pro Football Focus graded him as the best coverage safety in the National Football League last year. Would he be a good fit for the Jags? Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
He would. And you'd be glad that they'd have saved some of that cap space if something like that happens. Eric Weddle is not going to hit the open market, however, in my opinion, on that one. And then somebody asked how many teams have gone from three wins to a winning record the next year. That's a research project I'm going to put Tyler on for next Monday's show. All right? So I have no idea how many have gone from that status to a winning record in 1 year's time.
But, no idea. No.
Let's add one to the list next year.
Heck yeah.
Right here in Jacksonville. All right, quickly, Tony, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, asking folks today the most dramatic non-Jaguar sporting event they've attended in person.
From Paolo, he said the World Cup last year was pretty dramatic. I imagine it was. I had a couple friends that went down there and saw the Ghana game against the USA. From Kevin, the 97 Florida versus Florida State game in the Swamp, amazing game and crowd, plus the 2001 Daytona 500 last lap. Rest in peace, Dale Sr. From at Irish Jaguar, Penn State versus Central Florida in Dublin last August. Central Florida made huge comeback only to lose on a last-second field goal. From Russ, Florida State versus Auburn for the national championship in the Rose Bowl. That was a darn good game. From Meta World Crazy, Big Bad Mama versus Mountain Fiji for the GLOW title
belt.
Love it. From Joey, Montana and the Chiefs beating the Oilers in the 93 playoffs. I was 10 and have been addicted to the NFL ever since. From Christoph, last year's Lions versus Falcon games at Wembley. My mate Marcus's face when the Falcons lost was priceless. From BCB Phoenix, we got 2001 final game of the World Series. I know you remember that one well, Mike.
Look, I know the Yankees lost. I think it's the best World Series I've ever seen.
Between the Diamondbacks and the New York Yankees. Dusty Duvall says 2001 Pepsi 400. Dale Jr. from like 6th to 1st with two laps to win 5 months after his dad
By the way, from your lips to God's ears on my fantasy team this weekend, because I got Dale Jr. and Harvick in the A group.
From Brett, the UNF versus USC upstate game last week. For a brief period, it looked like it could go either way, and the atmosphere out there did look like it was just beyond fantastic.
We did have somebody tweet us early about that same game. They said whatever that was like 2 weeks ago.
It was
like, dude, it was 5 days ago.
Yeah, it was last week.
You must have really enjoyed yourself, hey, and good for you. A couple quickly here on Facebook, Tony. Nick Carnes said Giancarlo Stanton hitting a home run his first at-bat after he bet everybody he'd do that, and he got called up to the Marlins the next day. 1975 Masters for Jeff Cummings. Jack and Arnie in the final group on Saturday. On Sunday, Nicholas battling Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, and Tom Watson as Miller, or as Nicholas pulls away down the stretch. It was Lee Elder's first Masters appearance as well. Let's see what else. Brad Toohey throwing a no-hitter in the Southern League Championship. You know, I did 5 years of Suns baseball. They won two championships, mm-hmm. and I racked my brain. I couldn't come up with a single, like the single most dramatic game I had seen. The opening game in the baseball grounds is great. I think it was like a 1-0 loss, though, something like that for the Suns. It was more for the atmosphere.
I was there for that game, but I don't remember.
13,000 in the stands.
Yeah.
Probably the most dramatic game I saw. They lost 1-0 to, I want to say, it was the Orlando Rays at the time, Tampa's double-A team at the time, and they lost it on a steal of home. It wasn't in the ninth inning or the bottom of the ninth, but it was late. It was like a seventh inning steal of home, straight steal of home. Only run scored in the game. That was pretty cool. And then Josh Wigan went with Randy Johnson's 300th win on a cold and otherwise miserable rainy afternoon in D.C.
Yeah, you're not going to see that again.
By the way, my
300 dubs.
Yeah.
My quick research has 13 teams who have gone from a three-win season to a winning record, and the Texans did it last year.
Tyler, do whatever you want. Goof off all next week. You have my permission.
I mailed it already.
Next week, Tony with Johnny O, with Ryan O, with Donovan Darius, with David Garrard, and who knows what other luminaries may come down the line on Jaguars today. That's going to do it for me. Thanks to Cardinal and Cadillac. Thanks to the Tom Bush family of dealerships. They bring you the fan feedback spotlight every day, by the way, including Tom Bush Mazda, 2015 Mazda 3, the 2015 Mazda CX-5, and the 2015 Mazda CX-9, all receiving Edmunds Most Popular Awards, and the 2015 Mazda 3 named by Kiplinger as best in class in the under $20,000 category. Check them out at TomBush.com or at TomBush Motors on Twitter. Again, thanks to Cardinal and Cadillac, our longtime Friday sponsor here on Jaguar Sale, our great sponsors. Tony, have a wonderful week. I know you will, because I won't be here, and that will brighten up your mood considerably.
Enjoy the vacation, man.
I hope the Jags continue to do some work. For the rest of you out there, I will see you either on the golf course or perhaps at the wine tasting gala or perhaps at the NCAA tournament next week or not at all. I don't know, at least for the next 9 days, and I'll be back a week from Monday. Everybody have a good time this weekend. Be safe, be smart. And we got XL Primetime coming up next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.